This is Stephanie Nelson, host of the Pivotal People Podcast. We have great conversations with all kinds of interesting people who are making a difference in the world. Follow us and leave a review if you like this episode so that more people can find us. Thanks for listening. Well, I'd like to welcome Corey Reed to the Pivotal People Podcast. Corey is the author of a new book. It's called Men in the Middle: Conversations to Gain Momentum with Gender Equity's Silent Majority. And I'll tell you what, when I saw the title of that book, I was like, oh gosh, maybe this is a little touchy. And then I thought, but I want to read it because I want to know, what is this book talking about? Welcome, Corey. I was just telling Corey that I personally have not been in the corporate world for 30 years. I haven't really encountered this. And then I stopped and said, wait a second, I have two sons and a husband and a male dog. I've always been the only female in our family. I can remember the day my second son was born in the delivery room. I'll admit, I was hoping for a girl. It was my second child. And she said she had two boys. And she said, I'll tell you what, the thing about having sons is you get to see the world through a man's eyes when you're their mother. And that has stuck with me for the 30 years that I've been a mother. It is true. You see the world through the other gender's eyes because we care about them and we're communicating. And that's why I'm excited about Corey's book, because I've read the whole book and she's talking about exactly that. Can we connect? Can we understand each other? Can we have relationships? Can we not be afraid of the elephant in the room? So I haven't done you justice, Corey, but welcome. I can't wait to talk about your book.
Oh my gosh. Well, certainly. First of all, Stephanie, I love the idea of the pivotal people. I think that's so exciting. And you and I can both share probably a number of pivotal people in our lives, including our sons. And I think that it's just the idea of the bold vision and having conversations. I appreciate the opportunity. And you're an incredibly accomplished person. I mean, I think it's so cool that you've just been an entrepreneur and really grown your business. And I think whether corporate or whatever identity, I just think it's really empowering that women and people connect, women and men connect to drive bold vision. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Well, and let me tell you a little bit about Corey. She's an author. Obviously, we're talking about her book. She's also a speaker. She's a communicator. She's a facilitator. She has worked in the corporate environment as a consultant, as a communicator. And here's the summary of who she is from her website, and I loved it. And it's simply this, and this is what we should all aspire to. Corey has spent years inspiring conversations that fuel connection and then ignite change. How many times do we try to push change through without connecting first?
Oh my gosh. You know, and I'll tell you, Stephanie, I just was listening to the interview you had with Bob Goff, and I loved the idea that he said that meet people where they are, right? We all have passion about what our viewpoints are. And I think you started off so well talking about looking at the world from a different perspective. I have two sons and two daughters. And yes, both teach me different things, but certainly the sons. And I mentioned that at one point I was outnumbered in my house too when the girls went to college. And so I think that idea of connecting, but it really is the aspect of meeting people where they are and learning and growing together.
So let's talk about this title, Men in the Middle. Can you define what that means?
Yes. So what it really means is after the height of Me Too, we had the extremes that we saw in the media, right? We had the examples of harassment and behavior that nobody wants to experience. And I think certainly the women were elevating their voices and speaking up about those experiences. And then we have the extreme of the men who actually were standing up and saying something, not as many, but speaking up. But when I talk about the men in the middle of the bell-shaped curve, when I did interviews with men about this topic we could talk about, what I found is men had a lot to say. They just weren't talking about it. And we're not talking about the extremes. We're not talking about the people who are the extreme behaviors on either side. But what I would call good guys, except there's already a book called Good Guys, but good guys in the middle that really could influence change, but just weren't speaking up about the issue.
Because they were a little uncomfortable. They were afraid that they might say the wrong thing. They're afraid Absolutely. They might be misunderstood.
Yeah. What inspired me is right after Me Too, I noticed that women were speaking up, including me, sharing our stories at the water cooler, at restaurants, wherever you were, speaking and sharing our stories. But the guys I worked with, and I worked with many men in my career over 30 years, what I consider good guys, they weren't saying much at all, or Worse yet, there were aspects of saying that they couldn't do certain things, like they couldn't meet with the women alone in office, and they couldn't have lunch with the woman. And it puzzled me because, to be honest, I've been the only woman on teams a lot of times. And I thought, gosh, if I couldn't meet with someone alone in my office about confidential information or over, you know, business dinners, you know, nothing inappropriate, but you learn so much about the business, and that would be a disadvantage for me in my career. And so I thought, wow, we really need to talk about this issue.
Because if we were to say, now I have respect for, you know, there are men who say it's not appropriate. I don't want to be put in that situation. And I'm going to respect that. However, then in fairness, we would have to make it the other way too. You can't meet alone with a man in the office.
Exactly.
If you're two women, you can't be at a disadvantage. What about a man who's working in a, you know, female dominated company? That's not fair either. So now then you're like, okay, now that's ridiculous. So can we, instead of saying I can't meet alone in the office, is there some kind of compromise, Corey? What would you suggest to the manager who wants to respect his personal values or her personal values, and yet wants to be able to have a confidential meeting? How would you approach that?
Yeah, and I think there are ways.
Zoom?
To do
it. What about Zoom?
Exactly, Zoom, or there are ways to do it. And you know, people sometimes have glass offices. I still don't think that's an awesome idea, but even that is a small step toward that. Or even meeting in a public place, right? Or having lunch in a very public entity. There are opportunities to connect. And that's really what we talked about earlier. How do we find ways to connect with each other? I wrote my own manifesto during this book. And I said, you know, men and women are heroes alone, but superheroes together. Mm. By God's design, we're different, right? God made us differently. And the beauty of that is together, we're really a powerful force. We have different skill sets and pieces. And so, you know, research is really strong about the leveraging the differences between men and women to make a more powerful statement. And so I think just finding that opportunity, like we said, maybe there's a public venue you can meet at, maybe there's over Zoom that you can have a conversation. And then I always think it's best to bring up the elephant in the room and say, hey, I'm not comfortable with this because this is the reason why. So how can we be perfectly transparent, disclosive about this situation? And they're just not, the conversations aren't happening. So I just want to, like, with a book, start normalizing those so that we can say, okay, let's have these conversations.
Because you certainly had, under, you know, confidential, anonymous understanding, you had 30 men who volunteered to be interviewed.
Yes, it was amazing. When I initially started, a friend of mine, a pivotal friend in my life, I'd say, when I had made the observation that the men weren't speaking up, she's a market researcher. And she said, Corey, you can research it. Don't make assumptions. Such a great, you know, something I should have known, Stephanie, but what a great pivot for me. And then I hired a professional researcher. And then when we first put out the ask, we didn't know if men would respond or not. So we offered a $100 gift card, anonymous, you know, conditions. And I was really pleased in our network that 30 men said yes, from managers to CEOs. And they just really ended up being delightful conversations. Now, since this was a research piece, I wasn't pushing back. I was just listening. I was asking questions by a question guide and listening. And I think that allowed the men to speak up in many ways. But there were some delightful conversations. One time, one of my favorite stories is what I called. This guy was so excited. He said, oh my gosh, I've been waiting to talk about this for 18 months, but nobody's asked me. And I thought, isn't that interesting that he had a lot to say? And stereotypically in corporations, we hear men speaking up, but women, you know, either getting talked over. But in this case, the men had a lot to say, but they weren't speaking up about it.
And oh, wow.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Well, now, and I don't mean to be naive, and maybe everyone knows this but me, but there were two points you made. And as soon as I read them, I was like, well, of course. That makes sense. But it hadn't occurred to me until I read it. So I'm just going to, one thing, the term gender equity.
Yes.
Now, people might say, oh, these are women's issues. And okay, no, these are human issues.
Yes.
Men are, it's just as discriminatory for men to act as if their family isn't a priority.
Yes.
You know, family balance, that's a woman's issue. Well, you know what? The guy would also like to see his son's baseball game. Without having to apologize for leaving at 4:30 or whatever it is. So I think we're a little closer to that idea than we were 30 years ago.
Yes.
And so gender equity, we're calling it gender equity because men are a gender too. And the second piece, which I thought was fascinating, and I'd love for you to talk a little more about the true statistics here. This is not about being nice to women. This is not about, you know, making it an even playing field. This is about what we care about in business, which is results and performance. And statistics show that companies that have senior leadership that are diverse, whether it be gender, race, whatever, have higher profits.
Absolutely. That's the fascinating piece about this, Stephanie, that the research, and this is academic research, so it's not even, you know, side surveys. There's a lot of rigor behind academic research in this sense. And so, yes, research shows that the more diversity you have in leadership, including boards or senior leadership, specifically for women, but also broader in diversity aspects, people of color, et cetera, that higher financial returns, better innovation, is just the results. The impact is very powerful. And a lot of the issues that leaders care about. This is what fascinated me. I have worked in corporations where data-driven decision-making is always important. That drives everything. And so I've been in meetings where leaders will say, where's the data? Where's the data? And in this case, what fascinated me is the data's there. And so why aren't we acting on it? And that really, you know, made me curious. I'm a big believer in leading with curiosity. I think that's the idea of meeting people where they're at. And when I ask the question, then we find out what's kind of below the surface on this. So it's not that the men don't agree with the data. What they were telling me is, well, what does that mean for me? And so I think if we don't address that piece of it, much like you said earlier, you know, men have concerns about family. It's not that they aren't. Women are conditioned more to talk about these issues. Men are not. And so it really, from my standpoint, how do we get men and women having this conversation together? Because men have something to gain from this conversation also.
Right. And, you know, it's so easy for us to divide people on these easy to see categories, yeah. You know, men, women. And let's face it, not all men are the same. Not all women are the same. We all have different skill sets. And so, yeah, it's even hard to say. It's not about hiring three men and three women. It's about hiring someone who you need skill X, skill Y, skill Z. Who is it? My brother is a senior executive, and I remember talking to him about this topic, talking about pay equity. And he said, you know, I don't even care. What I care about is getting the very best employee, and I'm going to pay the most I can for the very best employee. I am not limiting myself to men or women because he is driven by profits. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I was glad to hear that. He was the only boy in a family of all women. So maybe that was part of it.
Yes.
We trained him well, but good. Isn't that the truth? It doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman. If you want your company to be successful, you're going to hire the very most qualified person you can, and you're going to pay them as much as you can. And let's talk about that for a second. Another fascinating thing about your book, you talked about pay equity.
Yes.
Okay. So again, maybe I've just been under a rock, but you talked about how the number changes. It was 70 cents on the dollar, 75 cents, 87 cents that women make to men. But you said, when we compare apples to apples, you know, let's look at the job types and let's get specific and let's really compare pay within the same career category between men and women. And you said that we're now at 99 cents to a dollar. Yeah, now, that's not to minimize the 1 cent, okay? But that's a lot better than I thought it was.
Yeah, I think that there's some really, so again, this, because it's a nonfiction book, you probably saw all my citations, Stephanie. So that
her bibliography is longer than the book. This is well researched.
So thank you. But you know, it's interesting. My son-in-law is one, actually my oldest daughter's husband had questioned me on the fact. So I did a lot of research on this. And so on the average, yes, still, you know, in the average, we would look at 82 cents on the dollar. That's by pay scale research. It's not my research. But really, if we really can compare apples to apples, so same education, same experience, you know, doing that, then it is 99 cents on the dollar. And so I do write a story in the book that you probably saw, Stephanie, where, you know, that it, you know, even though that seems very small, it does make a difference in the scheme of life, and people are wise to that. But I do think this whole idea of what you mentioned earlier about the idea of meritocracy, right? The idea of hiring the best, rising to the top. The reason why I call it equity and not equality in the sense, because for me, equality is you give everyone the same thing. So, you know, Stephanie, if you and I are different heights and we need to reach up, you know, something on a shelf, I might need a smaller stool. You know what I mean? A taller one. You know, we all need that different. If when you talk about equity is what do each of us need to reach that height more? And so I think acknowledging, yes, what your brother said, that we want the best talent. I think there are some biases built in the system, you know, that hold some groups back. And so just acknowledging that exists. Again, this is about conversations to raise that issue so they don't stay below the surface. But you're right, there's some of these little nuances about the issue that I think I'm excited about if we can change the narrative to what you said earlier. This is a gender issue that men and women are both genders. Mm-hmm. And genders become this beautiful mosaic, but you know, in this I focus on this niche. And so how can we actually have that conversation so that we can really get the below the surface and make some change?
Well, after your 30 conversations, I'm just curious. A lot of this is new information to me, but you have been in this space for a long time professionally. Mm-hmm. So were there new insights for you, like aha moments for you, or did you basically understand the issues and these interviews confirmed it for the reader?
Yeah, I would say definitely some new insights. Because I was researching, I didn't respond, but some of them actually made me laugh, you know, when I was listening to them. So as a woman going through this from the other side, those are the parts that made me have the aha moment. First of all, this insight around, it's not about the data. It's really that emotional issue. And I did a lot of research on this, you see, too, that emotions drive decisions. As much as we like to think we're all data-driven, that emotions don't do it. I think Brené Brown has one of the best explanations I thought I heard when she said that most of us think that our logical mind is in the driver's seat and our emotions are in the back seat. But it's reverse. Our emotions are in the driver's seat and our data, logical mind in the trunk. And so I think just that, I saw that play out. That was really interesting. I think also the men had good advice, observations. One man said to me, you know, he had three daughters and he said, look, when I go to my girls' schools, how many men are in the schools influencing them? You know, I think that was an interesting aspect. I think the man that said he was so excited to talk about it. He actually had some really great advice that he wanted me to share. I think you probably saw that, Stephanie, in the book. He actually had some advice during the Obama administration, how women would help kind of elevate ideas for each other. And so what I realized is,
why would you share that? Will you elaborate? Because I love that part.
So the idea is, I've been in a meeting too, where sometimes what happens in a meeting room when you're the only female or few females, the stereotype is a female will speak up, no one responds, and then a male will say the same thing later. And then people are like, oh, that's a great idea. So that's something that, you know, it's stereotype, it happens. It's happened to me before, everything. But what the idea was that the other women did during this story on the Obama administration is that when a woman had idea, another woman would say, hey, Stephanie, that was a great idea. Did you all hear Stephanie's idea? She really brought up this idea that perspective taking is important. And by raising her sons, she actually got to see a different side of a story. That was the way of really elevating that and supporting each other in the room and elevating those ideas.
And what I loved about that was that women being supportive of each other, rather than, because there were used to be so few in the room, it's almost as if we were competing against each other.
Yes.
Instead of saying, you know what, let's be supportive of each other and let's not, you know, you don't have to sit quietly with your hands in your lap waiting for someone to ask your opinion. I have a quote, I have a book coming out and the publisher made some memes mm-hmm. for social media with what they thought the best quotes in the book were. And one that they picked out was, be obnoxious, see what happens. So, you know, someone might say you're obnoxious because you're a woman and you're, you know, saying what is clearly a compelling idea. And someone else might say, wow, that's a great idea. Be obnoxious, see what happens. You know,
I actually love that. I love that. You know, I think the idea, you're right. There's this, I mentioned that book too. There's a great video. And the two men that wrote a book on gender equity, that wrote the book Good Guys, they include this in their book. There's this great little Pixar video called Pearl. And the idea, it's, if people can look it up on YouTube, but it's a really compelling, like 8-minute short video, just showing the idea of assimilation and how even for women, sometimes we don't support other women too. And the men actually said that. One of the men said that to me. He said, hey, you guys don't help each other out either. And so I thought, to your point earlier, had I heard that before? Yes. But to hear them say it to me, I was like, oh, this is really interesting. We need to elevate that because this is what the men are seeing about how we're treating each other. Mm-hmm. And that's not helpful either to the issue of equity.
Right. So you talk about advice that men gave. So you come away from this, and if you could just like summarize it, what would you say after all this research and all these interviews, what is the key issue / problem here?
Well, for me, it's that the conversations are not happening. So the men were saying one-on-one how they felt, but they weren't feeling comfortable speaking up about it. Now, there's some research that men and women socialize differently. So, and I put that in there. But I think allowing a safe space, that's where I love when Bob Goff said, meet people where they're at. Mm-hmm. And so if indeed that more men are not comfortable speaking about it, so they think it's not their issue, it's a women's issue, then I think creating a safe space for men to have that conversation. Now, Stephanie, I know you and I talked, we have a passion for this. You studied women's studies in college. And I have girlfriends who said to me, oh my gosh, Corey, why would you even say that? And my point to them is, look, men still occupy 80% of C-suite positions and political organizations and other. So they're still very influential in these organizations. We need to partner with them because they're still influencing a lot of decisions. And so at the end of the day, the one thing I'd say is, how do we normalize men engaging in these conversations? So even the last chapter, I just put comments in there about what they said, so we can start normalizing, even if it's something that we might think is like, wow. And it wasn't bad. Like one guy told this great story that he actually, some of the young engineers had spoken about a female engineer, but referred to what she looked like in her jeans. And he stopped the meeting and he said, no, that's not appropriate. And I thought, that's a small thing, but wow, that's not the stuff we see in the media, but that's so cool. How do we normalize that so other men can do this and see that that's normal behavior?
And also there was an example of being at a restaurant and, you know, one of the guys was being a little inappropriate with the waitress and the man spoke up. But you know what? It offended the man. You know, there was a woman there, but even if there wasn't a woman there, it offended the man. We can't assume that it's only women who are offended by this kind of thing. The men, absolutely. You know, there are men who are offended by this. So let's be respectful of each other's. This is a professional environment. And the hard part is speaking up, right?
Yes.
Because none of us want to be ostracized, not, you know, up, they're out of the group. They're not going to be invited to the lunch or the golf or whatever it is. And that's the hard part.
Absolutely. And that's why in the middle of the book, I really spent a lot of time acknowledging that men do face challenges too, that we don't discuss. So the ideas of toxic masculinity, not that masculinity is bad, it's just that there's some aspects of deeply ingrained stereotypes that keep men in certain spaces. And so, you know, the suicide rates for men are much higher than women. Mm. There's just a lot of things we don't acknowledge that men face. And I think it's time for us to raise those issues so that pendulum swings. All right. So we are talking about this. How do we come together in a partnership? Leadership is gender neutral, right? Leadership skills. Actually, women have women and men have the same. Women have a slight edge in the latest research, but still, you know, this is a leadership issue. It's not a gender issue. It's not faced toward women's issue. It's really about how we can come together to make this world a better place. And I often say the world's problems are too big for us to focus on gender differences. How can we come together to make a much bigger, bolder impact?
I love that. I love that. That's a t-shirt or a coffee cup. How do we come together to make a bolder impact?
Yes.
It would be like having a football team and saying, we're only going to let half the players play.
Exactly.
We need the whole team.
Exactly. And I think that's the opportunity we have. And that's why I love the idea of pivotal people. I mean, you know, I'm humbled to be part of this pivotal people piece, but if we could just spark a different conversation, much like you said earlier, I have two sons and two daughters. I want my sons to have a great opportunity in the workplace too someday.
Right.
And, you know, they're starting on their journey. And so I think it's really for both men and women to benefit, so we all benefit.
You know, it's interesting. You just said that. And I have this handful of pivotal people. I tell the story in my book of people who, if they hadn't stepped into my story would not have gone any,
yes.
It wouldn't have happened the way it did. And it's equal between men and women.
Oh, that's
it's
interesting.
A handful, and half of them are women and half are men. That's interesting. So
I think if we observe that, I mean, I love you sharing that too, because I think that's all along the lines of how do we pivot this conversation? so that we are seeing there's benefits for all. And something you mentioned earlier, research even shows that men are very disturbed by missing dinners. They miss a lot. And even some of the CEOs or retired CEOs I interviewed, their biggest regret is how much time they spent away from family. You know, they grew their careers and they got to this successful point. But when they looked back, they said, my family came at a sacrifice for that. And so,
yeah,
I think that there's trade-offs that we don't even know that people are having unless we have these conversations.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you writing the book. And you know, my sons are getting this book.
Well, thank you. And you're such a voracious reader that I was like, oh my gosh, I am thrilled and honored that you read the book. So thank you.
Oh no. And I'll tell you, I read it. My husband and I just had a long drive across the country and I read it on the drive. And he is held captive in the car. So about every other page, I'm saying, and listen to this. And listen to this.
Well, thank you for spreading the word, Stephanie. I do appreciate that. My sons have heard that, yeah.
Well, I think he learned a lot too. So I completely recommend this book. We're going to have all the information in the show notes. It is available now. You can find it on Amazon. Men in the Middle, Conversations to Gain Momentum with Gender Equity, Silent Majority by Kori Reed, and that's K-O-R-I. And I want to thank you so much for taking your time, and I look forward to hearing how this goes.
Thank you. What a delightful conversation, and I so appreciate your enthusiasm and energy and letting us have this conversation.
I do too. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening today. We hope you're inspired. And if you like the episode, please take a moment to go to your podcast platform and follow us and leave a review so more people can find us. Now go out and be the pivotal person that you are.